How many of y'all know where Sam's Club is located? Know where Sam's is? Did you know Sam's, we don't do a lot of walking. I know we get a lot in our cars and drive, but if you were to walk from here to Sam's Club, it's probably about 7 miles. Or if you were to walk to Swannanoa, it's about 7 miles. It's just a little nuance, because that's how far these two disciples walked just to get to this little town they were going to. I took a trip to Ireland many years ago, and we were walking with this local who my brother had befriended. And we do not walk like a lot of people in the world walk, because he joked with my brother about, "You Americans don't do a lot of walking over there, because we're lagging behind." A lot of places do a lot of walking. And these two disciples are walking on the road to what town that we know of? What's the name?
Emmaus.
Emmaus. And we'll just start with reading this. This particular one tonight is very familiar to a lot of us. And after we read this, I'd like you to just come up with anything that strikes you about this particular story. I have my class, my notes, and everything wrote up. What are some unique things about this particular story in the Scripture? It's in Luke chapter 24 and verses 13 through 35. So it's a pretty lengthy story, but I think it'll be good to read it. I'll read the first part, and then I may ask some of you guys to help me and others. And behold, two of them were going that very day to a village named Emmaus, which was about 7 miles from Jerusalem. And they were conversing with each other about all these things which had taken place. And it came about that while they were conversing and discussing, Jesus himself approached and began traveling with them. But their eyes were prevented from recognizing him. And he said to them, "What are these words that you were exchanging with one another as you were walking?" And they stood still, looking sad. A little quick note. Anyone have King James? That one particular verse says something very different. It says, basically, the sadness part is part of what Jesus is questioning. Like, why are you looking sad? It's part of the end. Does anybody have that? They don't have that version? Okay. We've been purged of King James in this building here. I'm New American Standard today. And they stood still looking sad. And one of them, named Cleopas, answered and said to him, "Are you the only one visiting Jerusalem and are unaware of the things which have happened here in these days?" And he said to them, "What things?" And they said to him, "The things about Jesus the Nazarene, who was a prophet mighty in deed and word in the sight of God and all the people. And how the chief priests and our rulers delivered him up to the sentence of death and crucified him. But we were hoping that it was he who was going to redeem Israel. Indeed, besides all this, it is the third day since these things happened. But also some women among us amazed us when they were at the tomb early in the morning and did not find his body. They came saying that they had also seen a vision of angels who said that he was alive." So I'll stop there, and maybe Zach, would you read from that point to the end, to 35? 24, start at 24.
Yeah, I was looking at the King James in my phone. I lost track of where you were at.
Oh.
Okay, so you're 24 through where did you want?
Through 35.
Okay. "Some of those who were with us went to the tomb and found it just as the women had said, but him they did not see. And he said to them, 'O foolish ones, and slow of heart to believe all that the prophets have spoken. Was it not necessary that the Christ should suffer these things and enter into his glory?' And beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he interpreted to them in all the scriptures the things concerning himself. So they drew near to the village to which they were going. He acted as if he were going farther, but they urged him strongly, saying, 'Stay with us, for it is towards evening, and the day is now far spent.' So he went in to stay with them. When he was at the table with them, he took the bread and blessed and broke it and gave it to them. And their eyes were opened, and they recognized him, and he vanished from their sight. They said to each other, Did not our hearts burn within us while he talked to us on the road, while he opened to us the scriptures? And they arose that same hour and returned to Jerusalem. And they found the 11 and those who were with them gathered together, saying, "The Lord is risen indeed and has appeared to Simon." Then they told what had happened on the road and how he was known to them in the breaking of the bread.
Thank you. Anything strikes you quickly about anyone all about this particular story? How about the miracles? What miracles? This is part of our study of miraculous things. What miraculous things that are obvious that have taken place here?
His identity was
obscured.
Later on, in the breaking of the bread, he revealed himself.
Yes.
And then disappeared, of course.
Pardon?
And then disappeared.
And disappeared. Yeah. Yes. Rick, and then Zach.
The very fact that he's there to appear to them.
Yes. He joins them on the road.
Yes. This is somebody they just saw crucified and buried in a tomb. And now he's there with them.
Yes.
And they don't know that at first, obviously.
Same thing, yes.
I also find it interesting that he vanished from their sight, and in the time that they returned to Jerusalem, he had already appeared to somebody there.
Which, some of this tells you that, he's about to ascend to heaven, and we know that his body, that he came back in after resurrection, was still his body because they could see the wounds in his hands. But evidently, we can only infer that some things had changed because of his ability to, he was exercising things he hadn't in the past to make himself just appear or disappear like this. We do know that much. You know, anything else? Rick? Okay. But yes, those are the miraculous things. But is this filled with other things, teachings and such. This particular thing. Verse 13, the two, one's named, one's not, Cleopas. Cleopas isn't named anywhere else in the Bible. And there's conjecture about who the other might have been. The way that it's written in first person, it could have been Luke possibly. But we really don't know who the other one was. But there are two disciples. And we can relate to them in many ways. There's a reference in verse 13 to that very day. And what day is that making reference to, do you know?
The first day
of Christ starting the new world of Christ, now resurrected. And it's a continuation, basically, of the narrative that Zach had us the first day of the week at early dawn when he had resurrected. And they were going to a town that historically we don't know where that town is. No one tries to conjecture where that is. But it's in the precincts of Jerusalem, probably a 2 or so hour walk. And it came about, verse 14 and 15, they were conversing with each other about all these things which had taken place. And what things were they most likely talking about? What could they have been chatting about here?
The crucifixion.
Yeah, we know from the context going forward. And we can only conjecture about specifically what they were talking about. Probably about the resurrection. Again, we know from the context later on in this same story. They knew about the women who had gone to the tomb early in the morning. And they knew others had gone to the tomb and found it exactly as a woman. But they didn't see Jesus. And while they were conversing and discussing, Jesus approaches. And by the way, that there is somewhat of an example. Is there anything about, all of us have the ability to walk so far, still do. And we all have the ability to talk. This is a relatable thing for us. What a blessing it is to be able to walk and talk as these two disciples are about things of the Lord and the benefits of that. You do have a comment?
Sort of imagine what the conversation was about, because they didn't still understand.
No, they didn't understand.
They're probably asking a lot of questions and not getting any answers yet.
Yeah.
And it's all right to ask questions as long as you're willing to look for the answers, and when they are obvious, make the most of them.
Yeah. And that's the thread of this story is going to help us uncover that, I think. But they were engaged. They were emotionally engaged with what had happened back in Jerusalem. They potentially are talking more freely now than they could have back in Jerusalem. They could potentially, I don't like these conjectural things, but we don't know any more about this, but they could be leaving Jerusalem in despair because of what had happened, and maybe heading back to wherever they live on the way to some other area. And they could not talk as freely because of fear of the Jews back in Jerusalem, but now they can. They're opening up with each other about what's happened. Is it possible Jesus truly has been resurrected? And but Christ joins them. And we don't know anything more about that. It could have been a busy road, or it just could have been a road traveled, and he was walking and joined up with them. And he wanted to do that. Jesus wanted to be in their company. And that's another encouragement for us. You know, the more we engage with one another spiritually, in spiritual talk, in that sense, Christ joins us too. There's a passage in Ecclesiastes about, I can't remember exactly the words, a strand of three is not easily torn. But when we're engaged in spiritual things, sincere, truthful, sincere things, and fear the Lord, talk with one another, then the Lord hearkens and joins us, I believe. Ecclesiastes 4:12, the two become a threefold cord is not easily broken. But they, in their communing together as they were talking, they were searching for Christ. They were trying to come to more knowledge about Christ and of him. And now Christ comes to them. And you could say, you know, that those who seek Christ will find him. He'll manifest himself to those who inquire of him. He'll give more knowledge to those who seek more knowledge about him. And it's interesting, too. Verse 16, their eyes were prevented from recognizing him. There's one other place in all four Gospels that makes reference to this particular story. If you turn over to the book of Mark, and it's only one verse, chapter 16 and verse 12. But it's worthy of looking at just in reference to this one point, because Mark references specifically this idea of them not knowing who he was. But he says it in a little different way. Mark chapter 16 and verse 12. Les, you made a mention of that, so you can read that if you can find it quickly here. Mark 16 and verse 12.
16 and verse 12. After that, he appeared in another form to two of them as they walked.
So that says he appeared in a different form. The other says he made himself unable to be seen. Either way, the key point, I think, is that the Lord made it such that they couldn't tell who he was. Why would he do that, potentially? What were some reasons why he... Some seem obvious, but... To teach, yeah.
They recognized him on first glance. They would have been all over the world with questions, and he would have trouble getting forward in advice.
Yeah. Yeah, he created the conditions so, such that... So the circumstances were as he wished them to be, Rick?
Well, I think this is one of the greatest lessons of this story is that, you know, their hearts were burning within them before they recognized who he was, when you look at the context of the way that was. So the way he convinced them of the resurrection of the Christ was through the scriptures. It was not through him appearing to them, it was through what had been written previously. And essentially that's such a powerful message that we don't need Jesus to stand before us to believe in him. We have everything we need to produce that faith.
And in the short term, he's teaching his own disciples that at this time, because they doted over being in his presence all the time, and now he was gone and dead. And so, but yet he gave an example that his presence wasn't needed. Same thing. I'm concurring with what you're saying. Any other comments about that? But he kept him. Yes, Earl.
I'm just curious if the fact that they were prevented from recognizing him would be classified as a miracle itself.
Yes, let's go. Yeah, that's one of the things. Yes, I'd say so. I read some stuff about they were walking into the sun, potentially, into the sunset, and because of that, or something in the air. But, yes?
Well, I think Mark's account actually clarifies that because he looked like somebody else. He appeared in a different... I think that's the point. He appeared in a different form.
Well, and can you think of other places where that same kind of explanation is given? Mary Magdalene. The gardener. So when it was to his benefit in teaching, he did that in a couple other occasions. So Christ's question, verse 17. What are these words that you're exchanging with one another as you're walking? And King James says, I think, say, and being sad. Is that what verse 17 says? Did you look that up? It does. Yeah, I remember that, reading that.
I don't have it up anymore.
But it does. Pardon?
That's what it was saying in that verse.
And the other ones, it's just the challenges probably translators had of this. But it says the same thing, and they stood still looking sad, as New American Standard. But it's a little different take on it if you look at King James, because King James is saying it's part of the sentence. Why are you saying these words with one another as you're walking and looking so sad? And Jesus, their sadness is understandable. Let's talk about their sadness for a minute here. Why was it that they were, in the context we learn later, why they were so sad? Basically what?
Hope was gone.
Hopelessness, yes. You know, they were in sorrow because of Christ was now risen, but yet he did not come in the pomp and glory. There wasn't even any evidence that they had seen his body that they really could put their hands on. But that's this mentioning in a few moments about it's been 3 days and nothing's happened. Meaning we expected by the end of this third day, because they know Jesus had taught them about the third day, they expected him to come to do what? Redeem Israel, you know, be the consolation of Israel, and to come back in glory with honor, you know, as opposed to the shame that he had suffered 3 days earlier. But they expected something of their own mindset, basically. You know, just like Moses had been a prophet, they thought, and was a deliverer, they thought the Lord would be a prophet and a deliverer for the nation of Israel. And he didn't fulfill that. So they were confused, wondering about a question? Okay. But other things we can learn from this, you know, do we sometimes have a sadness ourselves, and we shouldn't have that sadness? You know, that's a good potential. We can relate to these men and the things that they are going through. And as we go through this story, I think we can be like them. And through Christ's encouragement and Christ's teachings, we can help us get into a better frame of mind. And they were talking with one another, which is another thing we need to do. The more we can spend time with one another and good company and conversation, then that'll help us be in a better framework of mind. So Cleopas answers him back and says, "Are you the only one visiting Jerusalem and unaware of the things which have happened here in these days?" What do we learn from that particular response?
It was very well known what happened.
Yes, that's one of the key things. Very well known. It was the thing being talked about throughout Jerusalem in all places. And of course, the miracles probably didn't hurt that either. We went through with Zach last week, on Sunday, or Wednesday, excuse me. Anything else? Yes?
Kind of ironic that they think that Jesus is in the dark, and he's the only one that's not in the dark. He knows everything.
That's an underlying, fascinating point of this, that he's just entering his glory. He's just gone through the suffering he has, and yet he has this composure and yes.
Yeah, I imagine almost a smile as he knows what he's going to be revealing to these men along this road, and just the hope he's going to restore to them, and you know, just
yeah,
the you know,
yeah, and I mean, the Son of God, but showing compassion too, great compassion for these men. See, he knows where they are and where, you know, but he has high expectations of them too as we go through these next few verses. And something you can say about these men too, I think, what they were very civil to him. He was just a stranger to them still. And they could have said, what's it to you what we're talking about? What do you care? And so, but instead they had a heart to try to talk with them about the things they were aware of that were happening back in Jerusalem, on the presumption that he didn't know what had happened. They were a little incredulous that he didn't know, but they wanted to discourse, get into a more of a discourse with him, with this stranger. And as we should be also, I think that's an example. Those who have knowledge of Christ should do what they can to spread that knowledge. And then Les's point, a lot was known about Jesus in Jerusalem, back in Jerusalem. And you know, the first thing was, I mean, the next thing would be the pouring out of the Spirit, and that would have to be explained to others. But the first thing, that it was clearly known that this event had happened in Jerusalem. His next question, verse 19, is again fascinating, I think. It's just fascinating, because he follows up with the same restraint and asks them, what things? And he said to them, what things? What things have happened in Jerusalem? What do you make of that question? Yes.
Express their thoughts and their feelings and their ideas about what had happened. It's his way of pulling this out of them, I think.
Yes, I think so. And it was more the same, I think, he's showing such great unconcernedness about himself, about a very emptying of himself. You know, he's his suffering that he just went through, and yet he talks with them about what things, you know. I mean, the sorrow was behind him, and it was a time of joy now, but I thought there was a practical reason, too, that we can learn from, or anyone can learn from, but this is how the Lord would teach. He would want to know what they know also. He's digging a little, as we all would want to know how much a person knows, and then based on what they know, yes, hear from the teacher here.
Sometimes by asking questions, you can, and trying to get someone to explain to you, it makes them think, organize, and put things together that they didn't realize until they had to explain to someone else. So, explain this to me. And they start thinking through step by step by step. And then later on, he comes in and says, okay, you don't have this all the right situation here. Hold on. Let me show you.
Yeah. Yeah. And, yeah, that's a part of this. Definitely. And teaching to that point where you know they are. You can expound on what they know and enlighten them on where they are, which is, I think, what he does here. He gets them to talk more about what they knew about Jesus. And that's the rest of verse 19. He opens up and he says, well, the things, you know, they said to him, the things about Jesus the Nazarene. And what about how they describe him? Really, verse 19 is their description of him. Anything we can gain from that, how much they knew of him. I think he was referred to as Jesus the Nazarene. I think that was a common thing at that time. But what about, they said he was a what? Prophet. No, they don't get it. But that's how much they got at that point in time. Yes.
And they still didn't get it. They got what they got wasn't anywhere near as far as it should have gone. They realize, yeah, it happened. But
yeah.
Know they thought it was.
But they are speaking of him very respectfully, though, as they say he, you know, was a prophet, mighty in deed and word in the sight of God.
And what deeds? What deeds?
All the miracles.
The miracles.
Yeah.
Glorious miracles. Confirming the word. So if they're an example of some of his followers, you know, they knew not only of him, but they knew what he had done. And mighty in deed and word. And a lot of his were compassionate miracles, which helped people. So they knew who he was. What about the phrase, in the sight of God and all the people? There's a lot of men, namely the Pharisees, you know, they might be the darlings of the people, but not of God. And so agreeing with Earl, like you said, very... they were spot on some of these things. He pleased the Father as well as men and all the people. Yes.
And maybe in the sight of God and all the people is a way of saying just completely undeniable that these things were taking place.
Yes.
As God is my witness, we said.
Yes.
You know, God knows what's going on here, and that, you know, that's what.
And the next verse, who does he blame? At whose feet does he lay the blame for his death? How the chief priests and our rulers delivered him up. And there's the Romans on this other part. The Romans we can credit for the actual carrying out of the punishment. But it was the chief priests and rulers who delivered him up to the sentence of death and crucified him. And here's what it starts. Their next things that they say are where they don't please the Lord. But we were hoping that it was he who was going to redeem Israel. And so that's you know what you're saying. That's where they're missing it. They were his followers. You know, they were passionate about following him. They could see the things we just talked about. But they missed it, and so they were dejected and without hope. And this is the reason why. And indeed, besides all this, this is the third day since these things happened. By now, if it were to have happened, it should have happened now. So they're on the road, leaving the area. They also make reference, though, verse 22 and 23 and 24, the things that they were aware of that had happened back in Jerusalem. And this is an affirmation of those events happening, too. We can, you know, these events affirm one another as proofs of the scripture, I believe. The first ones that he mentioned are who? The women, right? But also some women among us amazed us when they were at the tomb early in the morning and did not find his body. They came saying that they had also seen a vision of angels who said that he was alive. And then verse 24, and some of those who were with us went to the tomb and found it just exactly as the woman also had, but they did not see him. So it really ties into the concept of their expectation of him as a, you know, physical savior that was going to redeem the nation of Israel. Is there some irony in all this? What is the great irony of this?
They didn't understand what the very thing that disappointed them and thought that it was the end of this great prophet as they saw him.
Yeah.
Was actually the very event that saved the world.
Yeah.
He did redeem. The very event is what redeemed Israel.
And thus Jesus' reaction that's coming in a minute here is you are so not getting it. The very thing that you're looking right at is the very thing that you should be overwhelmed with joy about. Overwhelmed with joy. And there's some... he discredits some things I read, but I think it's accurate. They potentially didn't think that the women could have seen a vision of angels, because if angels had appeared, it would have potentially been to the apostles. So they may have discredited this particular vision of angels because of that. And then some of us who were with us went to the tomb and found it just exactly as the women had said, but they didn't see him. So going back to their sadness, they don't have anything to really latch on to in relation to their concept of the physical redemption of Israel.
It's curious that of all the people Jesus could have appeared to, he doesn't appear initially to the apostles. He appears just to some women at the tomb and these two disciples on the road. You know, there's no favoritism here in terms of
that.
I remember Ben Walker, I think in his lesson, he said, I would have gone straight to the chief priests and rulers. Oh, see, you know, but this is not what he does.
No, the nature of his kingdom, and every bit of it is teaching. Every bit of it is teaching and examples for how, for us and for all Christians to understand his message of redemption. And he said to them, here is his rebuke. And he calls them foolish men. Is that inconsistent with what is written in the Beatitudes, do you think, or the Sermon on the Mount? He said, call no man fool a fool. I don't believe it is, because in that case, he's talking about a true foolishness and not... They're being foolish in two ways, really, or in one way. In their slowness of heart, which I think could really be looked at as a single thing, but specifically to believe in what? All the prophets had spoken. He's not actually criticizing them for not believing that angels had appeared to the women. But they would have understood those things and those events had they been conversant and knowledgeable of what the prophets had said, because it's all laid out for them. Here they are, you know, Jews that should know what Isaiah 53 says and means. They should see in the Old Testament all the different places you can look in the Old Testament and see Jesus in prophecy, and all of it points to him. And yet he's rebuking them that they did not know those things.
Or perhaps the foolishness was they knew them, they just hadn't put it all together.
No, they hadn't put it together.
They were aware of it, they knew it, they didn't know how to fit it together. They hadn't taken the time to connect all the dots. They were there, the picture had been drawn, but they weren't looking at the big picture. They were looking at themselves saying, what's going to happen to us now? Instead of what has happened to us now.
And it really doesn't take too long for it to come together for them, as long as the teaching is truthful and accurate, which is what is about to happen. And it would be lovely to have a copy of what Jesus said to them in the next verse or two. But we have it in other places throughout the Bible, I think. But his main, verse 26 is the crux of what we were talking about a moment ago. Was it not necessary for the Christ to suffer these things and to enter into his glory? These things that you're so depressed about are exactly the things that needed to happen. Nothing else would have allowed him to enter his glory. Nothing else would have allowed him to redeem mankind and to offer salvation unless he went through those things that they're so depressed about having happened. And then the teaching is referenced in verse 27. And he starts all the way back with Moses and with all the prophets. And he explained to them concerning himself in all the scriptures. You could say he's starting to reveal himself somewhat, but he doesn't fully yet. We know that until they break bread and in a little bit here. But he basically goes through and teaches. And truly everything in the Old Testament is going to point towards the Lord, towards God, or towards Jesus and his redemption of mankind. But they approached the village where they were going. And what did Jesus do as they approached the village and they approached the home that they were going to be staying in? What does some of your versions say there? Go ahead. He's proceeding on. And anything you can read from this, because, well, their reaction to him. And they urged him, saying, "Stay with us, for it is getting toward evening, and the day is now nearly over." What about their reaction to him? Is there any bigger picture things we can learn from that little event that just happened there? Their desire, basically. And it's a microcosm of you have to invite the Lord in. You can't. You have to implore him. Now, they've been with him, and they're excited about what they've heard, which, again, is a lesson for us. If we're excited about where we are learning, we should yearn for more and long for more the way they did. But he wasn't going to, I mean, in some ways he's courteous and hospitable and doing what he should do in his behavior. He's not going to, follow him. He made them implore him a little bit to come in.
It seems to be saying, we want to hear more.
Yes.
You shared this. One of the things from Moses and the prophets, you explained these scriptures to us Stay with us. We want to hear more.
Yeah, they're getting it. They're getting it, like Neil said a minute ago. They're getting it. They're figuring it out.
The process is opening their eyes.
Yeah.
It opens their mind's eye.
Yeah.
He has it opened.
Also known as your hearts, right? Your and
you know,
yes.
Well, it reminds me of the Beatitudes. Blessed are they who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be filled. And that they were getting filled with the presence with him, and they wanted more of what he was offering to them.
Yeah. And he likely continued teaching while they got their food ready and such. I've read that it's unusual that he took the lead in the breaking of the bread and asking blessing for the food. And it's at that time that, according to the Lord's will, he revealed himself to them. And that we know that's what it says, basically. And their eyes were opened and they recognized him. He vanished from their sight, and which is what the Lord does for our lives too. Sometimes he's with us, and then sometimes he's not with us. I think, and they saw him, they recognized him, and then he vanished. And that's the verse following it. It says, "Were not our hearts burning within us?" So they're thinking back to the road prior to them knowing who he was, while he was explaining the scriptures to them or to us. And the great point is that it's nighttime now, most likely, and their food's sitting there. And how do they react now that they know what they know? They've got to walk back to Sam's Club right now. Long walk at night, probably a threat of harm, you know, at night. And yet they arose that very hour, which would indicate they left their supper on the table. And they headed back to Jerusalem. And found gathered there, verse 33, the 11, and they got concurrence. They were ready to tell their story, and yet the apostles, the other disciples, reiterated back to them the things that had happened at the same time, basically. The Lord has really risen. Now, this is a great passage. We learned that the Lord appeared to who? To Peter, basically, and which is a wonderful appearance to encourage Peter, who probably wasn't feeling too good about his denial of the Lord, and so he's encouraging him as a. And they began to relate their experiences on the road, and how he was recognized by them, in the breaking of the bread. So tonight wasn't any issues on filling the time with this particular story, but what a great passage it is.
Right. It's taking,
yes.
It's taking a sense of the lead to win it because it saved him 14 miles of walking.
Yes. We all learned from that. Guys all learned, yes.
I think they would have stayed there because that's where they went back to.
That is where they went back to. Yeah. But then we wouldn't have the story of the two men on the road to Emmaus. So, I'm not sure. Which we all need, right? Thank you very much.